from WGCU, this is the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. The classic novel Lord of the Flies by William Golding celebrated its 70th birthday last year. Part of the celebration included a new gorgeous graphic novel version, which is stunning. It was adapted and illustrated by Amy DeJong. DeJong's graphic novels have won awards in France, Japan, and the U.S. She lives in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and I'm thrilled that she joins us today to talk about her adaptation of Lord of the Flies. Amy DeJong, welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's just start at the beginning. What inspired you to create a graphic novel version of Lord of the Flies?
Well, Lord of the Flies has been one of my favorite novels of all time, basically. I read it for the first time in my teens. I think I was 14 years old in school. Mm. And we had English class, and we had to read one of the classics, you know, Animal Farm or 1984 or Lord of the Flies. And I remember choosing Lord of the Flies, and it just blew me away. I couldn't put it down. I mean, it was probably the first time I enjoyed my homework, you know. I reread it many times since then. And I kind of always imagined that it would be a perfect graphic novel. But I didn't really think I would be that person. I just really saw it as a visual book. And at some point I just thought, why not me? Why not? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to write to the publisher and ask if I can do it. So that's a short version of how I got to do this graphic novel and also what the book means to me.
And I know that you asked a couple of times. I really like that story because I think it just shows that, you know, if you have stamina. So can you tell that story briefly, too? I know they didn't just say yes right away.
That's right. No. In fact, so I think I was about 25 years old when I sent the first email. And I hadn't done any graphic novels at that point. I just graduated from art school. Had no idea what to do with my life. And I thought, I'm just going to write to the British publisher of Lord of the Flies and see if they want to have a graphic novel version by me. And they said no. And they had all the right to, because I had nothing to show. You know, I was complete without any experience. So they said no. And I tried again a year later when I had actually finished one graphic novel. And again, they said no. I think it wasn't just for me, but it also had to do with the permission from the Golding estate and also the rights, you know, the copyrights and stuff. It's a bit complicated, but you cannot just draw a graphic novel based on a classic. So it was all way too complicated, and I basically gave up after, you know, that second no. I thought, you know, I'm just going to do other things. I'm going to make other books. I'm going to write them myself, and it's fine.
Yeah.
And 8 years later, I receive an email from this publisher asking me if I was still interested, because they could actually do it with me. They had the permission they needed. They had the copyright sorted. And so I had to wait a long time, but I finally got the approval.
That's great. And I know there are, I think, two films. There's a stage version, there's a radio BBC version, and a ballet. It's a very popular story, and I feel like every kid in the world reads it in school. Did you watch any of those films, or were you taking in any of those other versions while you were working on your adaptation?
Well, I had seen the films, but when I was probably 15 or 16 years old, so that was a very long time ago. And I had several talks with the Golding family. So that's William Golding's daughter and her children. And they had advised me not to watch any of those films again because they said it might be better if you don't get influenced too much by another visual medium. So I kind of followed their advice and decided I'm not going to watch any of those films. I'm not going to watch any of those plays. I'm just going to go with my intuition, read the novel, and that's it. You know, just really base it on the pure novel. And the funny thing is, so I'm very happy that I did, because after I finished this graphic novel last year, I decided to actually watch the films and see what was different. And there are many, many differences, one of which was the ending that I'm not going to spoil for anyone. But one of the films makes a very interesting choice regarding the ending. And I thought, oh, I'm so happy that I didn't see this while working on the book, because it would have probably influenced me more than I would want to. And now I just really stayed close to the original novel. And I think that really paid off as a homage, basically, as an ode to William Golding's classic.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you. How closely did you stick to the text of the novel?
I deliberately chose to stay very close. But the freedom that I took is mostly visible in the drawings. So if you look at the text, for example, all the text was taken from the original novel. And I think it's about like 10% of the original novel. It's almost nothing. But all the sentences that you will read in a graphic novel are taken from the novel. But if you look at the drawings, I took some liberty. I took some decisions that I liked. Mostly, for example, when the kids are dreaming or when they are, you know, getting obsessed with something. There's a character that gets obsessed with hunting and at some point, he just sees the pigs that he wants to hunt everywhere. And that's the kind of situation that I, as an artist, can really like draw that obsession and put some emphasis on that obsession. So I did, you know, take some freedom to choose my own scenes and choose my own decisions. But if you look at the drawings, you will see those most of all.
Yes, and the dreams, like when the kids dream, and just, oh, it's so beautiful. I wish this wasn't radio, so I'm hoping we will be able to publish a page or two just so people can see your style, because it's so, it's really, really gorgeous, especially the colors you chose, which I'm going to ask you about that later. But okay. I know you just mentioned that you were in touch with William Golding's daughter and his family. Is there anything in particular that you got from her as you started to work on the book?
Well, yeah, actually, I was very happy that she wanted to look at the storyboards, for example. Mm. So in my process, I decided to sketch out the whole graphic novel first in black and white, in rough sketches. And I call it a storyboard because I think that's like the closest thing. It's readable, but it's still very rough. So that makes it easy to change things. And I sent the storyboard to my publisher, but also to the daughter of William Golding, Judy. And she gave me some very good feedback. There were actually some scenes that I had left out because I thought, you know, we've already seen this happen before, so I can kind of skip this scene and that scene, etc. And then she would reply to me and say, why did you take that scene out? It's really important. And actually, when I put them back in, I only then realized that they were very important and there were some crucial scenes that I had left out. And, you know, there's nobody in the world that knows the book better than her. I mean, she was 9 years old when the book was published. Mm. So basically her whole life, she's lived with this book and she probably knows every page out of the top of her head. So I was just so happy that she was there to look through the storyboards with me and have those little moments where I could really see like, oh, yeah, you're right. This is something I totally missed, but it is a crucial moment.
I think that's so lovely that she was willing to collaborate with you, and I'm sure it makes for a better final product. It's really, really nice. In your note from the artist at the back of the book, you write that this project was the scariest thing you ever committed to. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think it was scary on several levels. One of them was that it is a classic, and for 70 years, people have read this in school. Like you said, I think lots of people read it in school, but also outside school. There are academics that have turned this book inside out, and that probably know it much better than I ever will. And so the scary part for me was creating a graphic novel and then publishing it. And yeah, I guess I was just scared that people would write to me and say, oh, you completely got this wrong. You totally missed this deeper message, or you missed this crucial scene, or you changed this character, or, you know, that people would somehow correct me and point out the mistakes I made in interpreting this book. And I think it was only halfway the process that I could kind of leave that behind me and acknowledge that this was going to be my version. This was going to be my graphic novel. My name is on the cover, so it's very clear that this is my interpretation of this novel. And if anyone else has a different view or different perspective on the characters, that's fine too, you know. So realizing that made me a little less scared, I think. But still, I would, you know, after delivering all the files, I would just wake up at night screaming, thinking, oh, no, I forgot to put this little sentence in. And oh, no, they're going to kill me. But I can say now, I mean, the book has been out for a while now in different countries, and I haven't had any bad responses at all. So I think I was just overreacting.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I was going to ask you what kind of response you've gotten, and if there are any young readers maybe who are just discovering it through your adaptation. I don't know if you get any of that feedback or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what I hear a lot is that people read the graphic novel and then after that pick up the original. And that to me is brilliant, because I think that was one of the purposes of this graphic novel. I mean, it was never the purpose to replace in the original, especially not for kids. I mean, I think for me, the ultimate purpose was to inspire readers to pick up the original and read it, you know, make them curious, make them enthusiastic about these characters and want to know more, and then think, oh, maybe I should just, you know, get the original novel from the library. That to me was the ultimate goal. And to hear that is actually happening is fantastic. So in that case, my graphic novel works as a tool or as an introduction maybe to the original. And I still think the original is one of the best books ever written. So I can only be happy when people say, oh, you know, thanks to your comic, I discovered William Golding's novel. I mean, that's a great compliment.
That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. If you're just tuning in, we are talking with Amy DeJong, who adapted and illustrated a new graphic novel version of William Golding's Lord of the Flies. So as I was reading your adaptation, I was thinking of how many elements of the story still ring true today. Did you think that as you were working? I mean, I kind of thought of the environment and just the divisions among people. They seem even more pronounced possibly than in Golding's day.
Yeah, I think it is a book. It remains a book with many layers. I think on the surface, what you will read about is a group of young boys stranded on an island that try to survive in harmony and fail miserably. I mean, that's the surface. But if you go deeper, I mean, I think it's very clear that it's actually about the horrors of war, the horrors of dictatorships, and what fear can do. One very clear motive in the book is fear for the invisible. And it's very much about the fear that, for example, leaders or politicians will talk about and will put forward to make people follow them. And I think that's a very relevant topic. I think that's happening in Europe right now a lot. I mean, Lord of the Flies is basically a children's book, but I think if you read it as an adult, if you read it today, there's no question that you will see parallels and similarities to today's world. One of the things that always struck me when doing my research for this graphic novel was how it, in a way, also talks about the effects of social media, for example. I mean, the book was written in 1954. I mean, there were no social media at all at that time. But if you look at how people act on social media, because there is no consequences to their actions if they, for example, write nasty comments under an anonymous account, you know, that is a very big topic in this novel. The children basically will not get any consequences for their actions. There's no parents that will punish them. There's no teachers that will punish them. And so they get away with all the nasty stuff, and they will keep on doing it. And to me, that is, it's so clear on, you know, what's happening on social media, what's happening with cyberbullying and so forth. So, yeah, it is a book. It's 70 years old, but it's still very relevant, I think.
Yeah, which is part of its brilliance. It's so he got to the core of human nature, I think, with this book.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I want to move on and ask you about your craft and your, like, the details of your artwork. What material did you use for the panels?
So for this book, I worked in a kind of hybrid way. I started on paper, did my sketches in pencil and scanned them, and then digitally added the texts in the balloons. But then I basically printed those pages out again and start all over on paper with Indian ink. So all the lines that you see, the black lines that you see, are done in ink on paper. And the pages are actually quite small. They're like A4 size. And it's quite small, but I really liked it because it was close to the final format of the book. So if you buy the graphic novel, you get a sense of how big those pages were that I was working on. And so for the final phase, I would scan those black and white drawings again and color them digitally. So basically throughout the process, it was kind of going back and forth between my computer and my drawing table.
Ah, so the color is digital, is applied digitally, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, interesting. I just am so in love with the colors you chose, like particularly the variation between light and dark. I mean, I feel like this is a book that has a lot of darkness in it. Can you talk a bit about, did you have like a particular palette of colors that you worked with or not? Yeah, just say more about the color, please.
So for the colors, I decided to use the contrast of the book very much. And the contrast I'm talking about is the beauty of the island, because it takes place on a tropical island. So we're thinking yellow beaches, blue seas, and green palm trees, blue skies, you name it. Very bright, very vivid colors. So especially on the beginning pages of the book, you will see those bright colors. And as you continue to read, you will notice that the colors are slowly fading into a more grayish tone. At the end, it's even like dark blue and dark gray. And that kind of paints the mood of the children. So in the beginning, they are all very excited and, oh, there's no adults here, so we can just be by ourselves and everything. But at the end, it turns out that being by themselves is kind of a curse. So the darkness enters in them, and you can feel that through the colors. So, you know, in terms of color, I really chose to show that contrast, the brightness at the beginning and then, well, the darkness at the end of the book.
Hmm. Were you in on the production of the book at all? It seems like, I mean, the paper, the version, I don't know, maybe it's different in different countries, but the version I have, the paper is really beautifully thick and the colors are very nuanced. It's they really did a beautiful job printing it, which doesn't always happen. So were you in on those choices at all?
Yeah, yeah. I was very happy to be part of that process. Choosing the paper for a book is one of my favorite things to do in making a book, because it can make such a difference. You know, yeah. I've had books that were printed on very bright white pages. And if you're working with visuals, whether it's a picture book or just illustrations or a graphic novel, that really changes how you see those drawings. If you tone it down a little bit with the white, so you take a kind of an off-white color, it's way more easy to read. It's easier to look at for a long time. So I always kind of deliberately choose what fits with the novel. And, you know, for this one, I really like that the paper is kind of grainy. It's not very shiny and glossy.
Yeah.
It's kind of grainy. But the white color really makes the colors pop. So with the publisher together, we really talked about what paper would fit best. And yeah, like I said, that's one of my favorite parts of the process.
Yeah, it turned out so beautifully. And I also love that you included some early sketches in the back of the book. I mean, I always love talking to artists about their process. Can you talk a bit about, like, how did the boys change from the beginning of the book to the end?
Yeah, it's funny because I drew the boys many times before even starting the first page. I wanted to really know how to draw them. So I did lots of studying. I did lots of character, conceptual art. I just tried to really feel, you know, what Ralph and Piggy and Jack would look like. And then at the moment I could start with the first page, I would very naturally, you know, draw them consistently. Because, of course, in a graphic novel, you don't want the characters to look different on page one and, you know, page 300. Mm. So I really practiced a lot. I studied a lot. And I think one of the things that changed was that they became more childish after a while. And that's the characters that ended up in the book are kind of childish in a way. When you look at them, they look very innocent, very childlike. And that was an effect that I really liked, because I thought, you know, we should always be reminded that these are children. When you look at the movies, for example, they are really teenagers, so they're quite long. You know, they're kind of becoming more adults. And I thought, you know, we should always be reminded that they are 12-year-old kids. So I'm just going to draw them in a very childlike manner. And this is what ended up in the final graphic novel. So that's one of the choices I made in terms of character design.
That's so interesting. I'm afraid we're sort of running out of time. I have so many more questions. But is there anything else that you would like to discuss that we didn't get to?
Well, I think something nice is coming up very soon, because the BBC have announced that they're producing a television series on Lord of the Flies. And I have nothing to do with that at all, but I just thought it was great news if you are a fan of the novel or the graphic novel. I'm very curious, you know, what the director has decided to do. And so I'm really looking forward to this television series.
Oh, that's exciting. Thank you so much, Amy DeJong, the artist who adapted and illustrated the graphic novel of Lord of the Flies. Thank you so much for joining us on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. You can buy the book from Macintosh Books through bookshop.org. We will have links at wgcu.org. Thank you for listening to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm your host, Carrie Barber, and we had production help today from Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.